Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back our moderator, Nancy Birdsall.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. We have some great questions that you've put to our panelists, and I'm going to be ambitious and tell the panelists that I have three questions, which means we have, you know, per question per panelist, you can do the math. So, and maybe not every panelist needs to answer every question. We'll see. The first question that came up is the following, or one of the questions. How can we create economic incentives for parents to send girls to school? How can business, government, NGOs partner to create a job market to provide incentives and opportunity for girls in secondary school? Now, I like that question. I think it refers to a vicious circle, which the Minister of Education from Afghanistan, whom I believe is here, raised at a dinner yesterday that Jean Sperling was telling me about. And the vicious circle is the following. If girls don't have adequate economic opportunities, there's less of an incentive to send them to school. And if there's less of an incentive to send them to school and they don't go to school, then you have a round in which another round, another generation in which the jobs don't get created and shaped and girls don't have economic opportunities, and so on it goes. So I wonder if each of you could, I asked you a little bit about that before, but if each of you could return to that question and maybe think of it not just in terms of what your program does to create opportunities, but how your program is affected by the larger environment, be it Calcutta, be it Afghanistan, be it urban India, rural Africa, how is it affected by the larger environment in its ability to be successful, and how do you try to think about that challenge? Can I ask you to go first, Sister Cyril?
Actually, in Calcutta, there's no dearth of jobs. We don't have a problem like that. The problem is to have people who are prepared for the jobs. And one of the ways by which in India you're guaranteed a job is if you've got a good English medium education. An English medium in India is a highly priced and highly prized commodity, and therefore you have vicious cycles of affluence and vicious cycles of poverty. And that's where we're trying to break down those vicious cycles by admitting 50% children from those backgrounds, and then reaching out beyond that to reach as many as possible so that everybody gets a fair chance.
And they're taught in English?
They all learn English, yes.
They all learn English. Yeah, it's true. In India now, we know from larger data
centers
that all over India, relatively poor people are choosing private schools over public schools where they pay fees simply because they know their children can learn English. They may not be learning that much more. And, of course, in Egypt, there's a tutoring issue where relatively poor people pay tutors. So that's an interesting point.
Yes.
Well, in Afghanistan, as you know, it is a different situation by comparing with India or another country, because if Afghanistan is still into the war and just 30 years of war, so there is not that much economic opportunity for the family to have incentive that they can send their children to school. But the main issue that I am here, that through my experience, through work that I have done, that I could see that when provide quality program, and the quality program is that, like, you give opportunity to a girl that come and learn really and be able to implement the learning that she learned, so she will have opportunity to have a job. Right now, for example, in Afghanistan, every one of my students from the time that I was in a refugee camp, and right now I'm in Afghanistan, every one of them that they graduate from our center or they graduated from our school, Everyone has a job in a school, as a teacher, as a trainer. They work even as a minister of women affairs. They even work in the office of President of the United States. They are working in the Ministry of Education right now with the Minister Atmar. A lot of them have quality education, because once you provide the quality education in such a hard and harsh environment which we are facing, because security is not available, but once you provide the environment, secure environment, which means that we respect the culture, we respect the tradition. So we have separate classes for women and for boy, or for girls and boys. So as a result, they really learn and they implement. And we have nursing program, okay, we have university program, we have preschool program. That is fight over it right now in Afghanistan.
It's very interesting. We have India, which is becoming more and more a service economy in some ways, where there's demand for the skills that girls can acquire. We have Afghanistan, a post-conflict country with a huge scarcity of skills. Let me turn right away to Kotu to ask about the situation as you see it in sub-Saharan Africa, and then I'll go quickly to Anne, but we only have a few minutes, so
I think I think that in sub-Saharan Africa, part of the problem is that the curricula are not adapted to the modern economies and the modern world we live in. It's based on old French style teaching, rote memory. So we need a big reform, curricular reform. Yeah. But we also need to both government and NGOs who are active in providing education need to build bridges with private sector by creating work study programs, by also setting up internship programs, and developing vocational training, not in traditional fields, because with girls, especially in West or Central Africa, you see that they are pushed into subjects that deal with, you know, home economics and what have you. But we need to include computers, for example, computer training, science, math, and technology, so that girls know that there are opportunities. Once they come out of school, they can join companies, become technicians, and later on have the opportunity to do further education at a higher level. So flexibility in the programs, in the education system is needed.
So there's something to be done on the system side, but there's also partnership needed on the other side.
Exactly.
Now, Anne, you actually made the comment earlier that when you first went to Zambia, you saw that there was not a constraint on the demand side, that parents want education for their girls. And the question that has been raised suggests maybe at some margin there is a trade-off in some settings. Could you say a word about that? Do you still disagree?
I do. Fundamentally, I really do. I was in Tanzania recently at a policy meeting, and I was told by a senior policymaker, parents out in the Iringa district are in fact encouraging their daughters to fail their primary school examinations. Isn't that terrible? And I said, well, do you realize what happens when they pass and the parents don't have the means to send them to school? The parents are arrested. And so you have huge contradictions. How can you have a mandatory system which it is to ensure that girls go to school when they pass their exams, when actually the parents are required to pay? It makes no sense at all. So you have to look behind, you know, the reasons why people are making decisions. People tend to make common sense choices. We all tend to make common sense choices of our socioeconomic realities. And the fact is that poor people have no room for maneuver. So let's deal with, you know, the economic situation of the families. And let's also recognize the lack of financial literacy of young people coming out of the education system. A girl said to me, you know, I've never held more than the money for a box of matches in my hand. How can we expect young girls coming out of school, when emerging from secondary school, to take up job opportunities, to be entrepreneurial? So let's extend education beyond secondary school into the realm of financial literacy.
I was sitting at a table briefly with people from Latin America and the Middle East who were pointing out that girls are doing better in those parts of the world. And it's probably because the availability of job opportunities for boys in economies that are becoming more service-oriented has declined. So I stick with my economist's view that there is some margin at which it can help to ensure adequate opportunities, especially for girls leaving secondary school in certain societies, and that there may be an opportunity, a very Clinton Global Initiative kind of approach, which would consolidate the information and the opportunities, make them of sufficient scale in some settings, so that the signals to parents and to the school systems would be adequate. Well, Jean hasn't come, so I'm going to ask the second question. If could you each mention what is the constraint that is the most critical for you? Is it money? There was a question, do you see support and action from your local communities, businesses, and local leaders? Is it that kind of support, sort of a psychological local support? Is it money? Is it something else? And you have to really make it short because he's going to arrive any minute.
Well, I wanted to strike one blow for the education of girls for their own sake. We're all talking about the future mothers, future this. We never talk about the boys as future fathers. They get educated for their own sake. And I think if we can spread an awareness among parents that just being educated raises your whole level of living, I think this is very important.
Absolutely. And education for future fathers in those parts of the world where boys are dropping out too quickly. Yeah. Lovely
point. Yes, that would be a good idea also. Regarding the question you're asking, what was the question you asked?
What's your biggest constraint? What would you wish away?
Yeah, I think in India, we've talked a lot about other countries where boys are preferred over girls. India, boys are very much preferred over girls. It's part of the whole Hindu ethos for the boy to be worshipped. So that is an area which is a big constraint. If it's a question of a boy or a girl, the boy will definitely get the preference. So that's a change in attitude which would be very, very good. But at the same time, parents in India are very willing now to send their girls to school, as long as they don't have a conflict of interests.
My colleagues in India tell me that now having a girl educated makes her a much more attractive marriage partner.
Yeah.
Sakina.
Well, first of all, for me, the most and the biggest important constraint is security in Afghanistan. Because if Afghanistan security is good, so everyone have opportunity to go to school. So security is the biggest issue for
Afghanistan. You mean physical security?
Physical security.
Literally.
I mean, really, literally. But also, one other thing that, as she said, I'm going to follow. Education is the key issue to upbringing the economic standard of living. Because if you educate a woman, you educate the whole family. Not only you educate, a woman always is as the head of the household, manage how to organize her life or family life to have a better impact on their status of economic. So I think that if you give education to a girls, really you bring up the standard of their living. So we are talking about the disparate in the economic situation in Afghanistan, so we must emphasize education. Education can upgrade the level of poverty, can upgrade the level of health, can upgrade even the level of freedom of choice, such as communication, women's rights, because a lot of abuse, a lot of violence in Afghanistan. And how could you tell somebody that, well, don't abuse and don't have violence in here?
Right.
But if the women are educated, they can have a sustainable life and they can communicate with their spouse or their brother or husband or whoever is it, to not to do that. Because according to Islam, we have been given to that right, that we can defend ourselves. But unfortunately, religion has been abused. And right now, especially in Afghanistan, people are using religion for the political power. And as a result, everybody thinks that, oh, Muslim country do that, and Islamists, they cannot have education for women. That is wrong. And I really appreciate that if people look at this the other side, because education has been really encouraged in Islam. And that is the reason. Sometimes people are telling me, what is the motivation that you educate women? My motivation is that to really tell people that Afghan women have been abused, but not because they are just let them to be abused, because they are not educated. If we provide education,
so we have to stop you, but education as an end in itself and a means to many other ends that we value. Anne.
Well, definitely money, because I think we need a critical mass and we need to address family poverty and recognize that even in those countries that have abolished school fees, there are costs in sending girls to school, and those costs can be prohibitive for many, many families. And the other issue being governance, good systems of transparency and accountability, and the empowerment of organizations, individuals, institutions that care about this issue, and making this, you know, making this part of the ecosystem and incentivizing it. So I think that is also the other constraint.
Yeah, I'd like to see information on what donors are spending with what results every year in every country. And believe it or not, it's not so easy to get that information from the donors.
Money, definitely, but I would say resources, human resources. In order to scale up, you need to train people to implement the programs. And in order to train people to implement the programs, you need money.
But so can I interrupt with, if the teachers are not being paid enough to make being a teacher an attractive job for a woman, a girl, is it human resources that is the fundamental constraint, or the lack of resources to pay teachers enough?
I think it's a double-edged question, because it's like a chicken and egg question. You need money in order to retain the good teachers, but you need teachers who...
who get the Minister of Finance to ensure the Minister of Education has the resources,
so money,
that they won't be wasted.
The bottom line is you need money. And
that's where we're going.
But you also need the good use of the money. Governance is a key issue. I won't repeat what Anne said.
Could you all, do we thank now, or do we
think
wait?
I think I'm going to thank.
We...
The normal way we do it is, we're supposed to do in the theme, is to have Nancy ask a couple of questions coming from the tables, and then I was going to do a few themes.
They did. They came from the tables.
No, I understand. I understand. And then do the themes and have that. I thought the questions, it was going so well, I just wanted Nancy to be able to continue this conversation, because this is exactly what we hoped for from the start, was to have four remarkable people from four different parts, where you can see the similarities, but you can see the differences and their inspiration, and to think about what all of us can do to empower them more. So I thank all four of you, and I thank our excellent moderator for really a tremendous kickoff presentation. What I do want to do is still mention what are a couple of the other themes that did come up around the table, and I'm going to try to put them in a little bit of organization, and I think a lot of them were touched on. And then we're going to have our first few certificate commitments that are directly related to education. I think one of the themes was on teachers, and I think that one of the things people talked about on the table and up here was not just how you get more teachers, but in difficult situations. This is a problem in the United States, too. How do you make it get the incentives to go to the poorest, worst-off places? How do you make it a badge of honor as opposed to a stigma to be teaching the poorest areas? So the teachers is big everywhere, but in these situations, very challenging. Secondly, the issue of boys came up, and I think it came up in a couple of ways around your table. One, don't forget the boys. And it is absolutely true that in secondary education, particularly in Latin America, as Nancy is an expert on, the numbers do flip around at times. But the other theme, what many of you mentioned, was that you have to educate boys about the importance of educating girls. And for anybody who works on AIDS and education, they will tell you it can't just be educating the girls if you're not educating the boys, to think of the girls more of like they would think of their sisters or their mothers, as opposed to not having that concern. So I think boys' education came up in a couple of different ways. Incentives, I think, came up in a few different ways, too, which we talked about. One, most directly, is the fact that there's still so much fees in secondary education. The other that Nancy was really touching on was the kind of what's at the end of the rainbow, what's the incentive. It is amazing anecdotally when parents aren't sending their kids to school how much you hear this issue, what for, and having that economic incentive. And that also goes to another issue, which is that it is often the parents' choice. Educating girls may be good for the girl and good for the country, but you have to make parents in extreme poverty think it's going to be good for them, and what are the incentive structures to doing that. And then a lot of other, the last discussion, was I would put under the frame of girl-friendly schools, that people mentioned, obviously, the need for latrines, the need for housing, the need for schools to be close, to have health centers. And what's interesting here is that this is often about the parents, but you also hear for latrines, et cetera, it's the girls themselves that are embarrassed and don't want to come to school if there's not adequate facilities. So I really think we had too little time, but I think we covered a lot, and we hope, all we can hope today is that this is food for thought, for inspiration, for reflecting, but also not only on good policy, but on actions and collaborations that can happen here. With that, I would like to invite our first certificate presenter. Our first certificate presenter is actually going to be receive a certificate from President Clinton tomorrow for her work in education, health, and Latin America. But today she is going to do our first three presentations. You all probably know, or if you don't, you don't know, you go back and ask some younger people in your lives about Shakira. She is truly beyond international Grammy Award-winning singer and one of the most famous entertainers worldwide, even way outside of Latin America. You all know that. What you may not know, and you may also suspect that if she's doing good things now, it must be that she became rich and famous and decided what to do. That's not the case. She was 17, 18 years old. It was at the very start of her career, and she decided that before she knew what her fortunes would be in life, that she would start her own foundation to help deal with the remarkably and sad number of displaced children in Colombia, her home country. And so I'm going to butcher this, Shakira, but Piez Descanso, but I can pronounce the translation. Oh, come on. I'm just doing this, you know, anyways. But I can do the translation. It is the Bare Feet Foundation. And what's worth knowing is that right now she has six schools that her foundation has sponsored. Now, these are not normal schools. These are extremely big, significant schools that service community centers, health centers, the parents. It is just the most model schools. They now serve 30,000 kids in the very poorest places, the most displaced youth in Colombia. And secondly, she has been the co-founder of something called ALAS, which I can say better, and that means wings. But what it means is that she is the person, she is the leader, the initiator, who brought together 30, 35 of the most well-known entertainers and artists in Latin America with a couple of very specific commitments to improve 0 to 5 health and education for children in Latin America, and most recently spearheading the fundraising for children in Peru who've been hurt by the earthquake. So with that, I'm going to give the microphone to our first presenter, who I think has probably held a microphone before.
If you ladies would like to...
Thank you, Jean, for those kind words. We do have to work on your Spanish, though. Good afternoon. I would like to ask to the stage Mr. Fazol Abed, chairperson and founder, BRAC USA, also to recognize Dr. I would like to recognize Dr. Alan Rosenfield, chairperson BRAC USA. And I would like to invite to the stage Susan Davis, president and CEO of BRAC USA. Yeah, this is the certificate. I'm going to speak a little. I'm going to describe the project that you have been working on. BRAC USA, the Nike Foundation, the Novo Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and bilateral development organizations are committing to mobilize $271 million to spread the successful BRAC education model, first pioneered in Bangladesh, to youth in five countries of Asia and Africa over the next 5 years. BRAC commits to provide educational opportunities, including primary and secondary schooling, undergraduate and graduate degrees, and life skills training to 7.5 million youth in Bangladesh, Afghanistan, Tanzania, Uganda, and southern Sudan. This year's $271 million project hopes to mirror the success of last year's $250 million commitment, where individuals in five African countries over the next 10 years are benefiting from BRAC's comprehensive health, education, microfinance, and empowerment programs. That's really amazing. And yeah, we're going to move over there to have a photo of. Now I would like to invite to the stage Yolanda Richardson, President and CEO of the Center for Development and Population Activities. The Center for Development and Population Activities, in conjunction with anonymous private donors, commits $12 million over 6 years to improve the educational and health outcomes of girls in Southern Africa by providing them with the knowledge and skills they need to stay in school through and beyond secondary education. With the help of local partners and private donors, CEDPA will implement its successful youth development framework by extending its reach to hundreds of thousands of girls throughout a 6-year time frame. Bravo. Primary target sites include South Africa, Swaziland, and Lesotho in 2008, Mozambique, Malawi, and Zambia in 2009, and others to follow as the project unfolds.
Here's a certificate. It'd be so cool to be taking a picture with you.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
Oh, she's still trying to get one, I think. Okay, you're finished.
Okay, that's okay. Thank you so much. And now I would like to invite to the stage Steve Mosley, President and Chief Executive Officer for the Academy for Educational Development, to the stage.
Thank you.
The Academy for Educational Development is committing over $25 million to increase access to and the quality of educational systems for girls in primary and secondary education in selected African countries. AED's LEAD, Leadership for Education and African Development Project, will bring dynamic change in primary and secondary school learning to over 3 million girls in sub-Saharan Africa from Liberia to Mozambique. Efforts will be led by local community and schoolhouse leaders and are valued at 5 to 8 million in the first year alone. Educational programs in these countries will also be linked to its health improvement programs for children to prevent HIV/AIDS, malaria, and childhood diseases. LEAD builds on over 30 years of AED work with ministries of education and local communities in over 25 African countries to increase school enrollments and educational opportunities for girls. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Education leader with a teenage daughter and a somewhat older daughter, I am really lucky to be up here with you, let me tell you.
That's very sweet. My
thank
pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jean, the microphone is all yours again. Thank you so much.
Okay, for everybody who's already crafted in their mind their little quip about who's better in their second language, it's known, okay? Thank you. This has been as good of a first session as we could hope for. Thank you so much, Shakira, for the certificate presentation and the great work of the three commitments. You can have a break now. We will be back at 3:30. Anderson Cooper from CNN will be moderating the next panel on children who are most disadvantaged. One of our panelists couldn't make it, but we have Gary Nell, the president and CEO of Sesame Street, will be speaking, as well as many of you know Stephen Lewis, who is the former special envoy to the United Nations for HIV/AIDS, will also be on the panel starting at 3:30. We'll see you then. Thank you very much.